So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we've got a lot of stuff, but I want to highlight one thing that came across our news desk this week, and that is a foldable iPhone project from a group of, I don't know if they're hackers or, like, you know, engineers in China. We'll be talking about that and the idea of a foldable iPhone and kind of what that would mean for Apple. But of course, there's a lot of other news happening. We'll be talking about the Meta layoffs, 11,000 people. There's news around the crypto firm FTX. And of course, there's Twitter stuff. And you know what? We'll talk about Twitter stuff, but I don't want to do another Twitter-centric episode.
We're done
because
with, we've
been
so
there
tired of that.
And it's going to be a continued hellfire. As always, folks, if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, leave us a review on iTunes, and, you know, you can subscribe wherever you can get the show, wherever you get podcasts. You can drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. Typically, we record a live stream, a live show on our YouTube channel around 10 a.m. Eastern on Thursdays. Sometimes that's bumped up to 11 a.m., but if you check out our channel, you can kind of see when it's scheduled and join us. It's a fun time. I don't know when you saw this story, Sherlyn, about the folding iPhone, but tell me, what was your first thought once you heard somebody had...
I thought it was a Galaxy Z Flip 3 that someone ported iOS over to, or Z Flip 4. That's what it looked like to me. But I hear it's a nightmare.
I mean, it looks like a nightmare. Have you looked at this thing? So apparently a group of folks at the Aesthetics of Science and Technology in China basically took spare Motorola Razr parts. So if you remember that phone, which... we just don't talk about
it
all anymore.
It depends on, yeah, it depends on which generation. The very first generation of that one was god-awful.
And I feel like people just don't talk about the Razr at all, other than, hey, it's cool that Motorola tried to bring the Razr back. But they used spare parts of that phone, their own 3D printed elements in the iPhone X screen, made more flexible without putting on the glass part. So it was like just the OLED part of the screen. And an iOS jailbreak that lets, iOS run in this whole thing because it's not an official phone. This looks pretty wild. Just to see like the extent to which these folks have gone and done it. It looks like they took the hinge from the Razr. There's like exterior parts of the iPhone as well. So you kind of get the bezel. It looks awful when it's folded because there's a huge gap in between. But it does bring to mind this idea of like, I do think people are kind of liking the Z Flip, even if I think the kind of point of it isn't quite there. There are rumors about Apple doing a folding iPhone, maybe something we'll see next year or in the next few years. Sherlyn, you are head of mobile now. Like, you're the one doing all the mobile coverage. Would you be excited by a foldable iPhone? Like, do you think there would be a point to it?
Head of mobile.
I mean, yeah. You were literally just complaining about Apple calling you as we were starting to do this because you're so popular.
I don't know if Apple blowing up my phone means I am head of mobile.
If they call you, that means
I'm head of a lot of things.
Yeah.
Head of mobile. All right. Anyway,
I think that
a foldable iDevice is on the way. I don't know that it's necessarily an iPhone. I think it makes more sense for Apple to look into a foldable iPad mini. I think that that's sort of closer to the form factor they'd be looking at. I don't think that Apple has seen any reason necessarily to pursue a folding iPhone yet. Even with like something like an iPhone Pro Max. I think we've heard a lot of rumors. I think we've, you know, but there's a lot more credible reports out there around, say, a VR headset or even a foldable iPad. So not necessarily. I think this video that we saw with the mod is pretty funny. It's like, if you think about the what they've actually made, it's not, I personally feel it's a little misleading to call it a folding iPhone, because what makes an iPhone? iOS? And the fact that they used the screen from an iPhone X, like the parts here, like you
it
said,
looks,
were mostly...
I mean, on the outside, it looks like an iPhone. Like, it has the outside bezels, it has the,
here's,
the frame.
Here's what's funny, right? They use it with spare Motorola Razr parts, like you said, their own 3D printed elements, and an iPhone X screen that they made a little bit more flexible by replacing the glass that originally wasn't that flexible or foldable at all, and then some of the touch layers that they replace as well. So at what point is an iPhone not an iPhone or an iPhone, right? Like, this thing only has the iPhone 10 screen and iOS that's jailbroken to run on this thing.
Is I mean, I'm not saying anybody's going to go out and buy this. I'm not saying you should go get this phone, but...
Oh, no. It's not even for
as
sale.
An achievement, as an achievement, I think it's pretty cool. It's kind of cool that somebody did this and showed it was possible.
And to describe for the people who are tuning in just to the audio-only version of this, the picture of this thing, the screenshot, looks just like a Z Flip 4 or 3. Right, running an iPhone wallpaper, which by this point, honestly, you can get an Android launcher.
I would say go look up our story. You can actually, there is an embedded video there of the whole process of them developing this thing. And I don't know if there's subtitle for it. I didn't check that far.
It's closed captions. That's it's good. In English.
That's very good. Yeah. But it looks like the whole thing should be set to like an 80s, montage music. It's just like, hey guys, we got this crazy idea. We're just going to go for it. We're going to try to make a folding iPhone. I think it's pretty cool. It's more like the idea. I'm not super into folding phones in general. I think Samsung, has done a lot of cool stuff with the Galaxy Fold and the Z Flip. It does seem like we have heard stories that the Z Flip is the one that's selling more because it's more affordable. It's under $1,000 now, right? Like, it's a thing you can buy, and it has a cool, unique ability to kind of become smaller that no other phone can do right now. I could see Apple just paying attention to that, right? Like, they don't ignore these things. They don't immediately chase the fads that Samsung does or other people do, but... Yeah, they got big screen iPhones after the Galaxy Note took off. Yeah, they started introducing kickstands into the iPad with all those the keyboard cases after the Surface took off. So clearly, Apple's trying to both be like, oh, we're too cool to like follow in your footsteps, but secretly they're like, we got to do something about this. They're too cool. They're making us look bad. I do think Apple's going to do this, but you're thinking it could be more like an iPad mini situation. Would it be a phone that expands bigger? Because to me, I would find that more useful.
I think if you look at where their software is headed to, because don't forget that a big component of foldable devices is the software. And iPad OS only just started getting more like desktop friendly.
Oh, God.
And
yeah.
I think
more
right.
So
exactly. So we're I think Apple is going to face a lot of challenges on its way to developing a foldable device. Again, like I said, I don't think that iOS itself is designed for
a foldable interface.
Yeah, exactly. Like the closest we will come to that is iPadOS. And then Apple has to like determine a lot of things. Like, what are the new use cases they're going to introduce? Are they going to, how are they going to detect like the different folded states in the software, and then let developers work on their apps to make the layouts work in split screen?
I totally agree. Those are all solvable problems, though. Like, this is Apple. proven that they could do quite a bit. I trust Apple software more than I trust stuff coming out of Google, as we've talked about. And honestly, a lot of other companies too. I feel like Microsoft tends to disappoint us too when it comes to software solutions. I will not stop complaining about Windows on ARM and that freaking Surface Pro 9. So of all the companies to like be like, okay, this is a big problem, and we have to solve it in an interesting way, both hardware and software wise, I would have more faith in Apple doing it well. Do you think they would try to introduce something new to this like idea of a folding phone? Because that is what Apple's really known for, right? Like, they take the idea and kind of perfect it in a way.
I was reminded of this, and perfect that you brought it up at this time. I was about to bring up that Sir Holmes in our chat said, no one wants to waste time unfolding a phone again. So that's a
but
very important point. And the reason, so this ties into what you said with the whole thing about what happens on the outside of a phone, right? We're assuming this thing that if, say, Apple is making a foldable iPad or iPad mini, that it will fold in half with the screens facing each other, and then the external maybe becomes a phone similar to the Galaxy Z Fold, or what, like the Z Flip, where it has a cover display perhaps. That would solve some of the problem of like having to first unfold your phone before using it, or that is why they're not going to pursue it on a phone, because a device like a tablet, people are less annoyed by like you have to take it out and unfold it first.
You assume it's going to take some
phone work. A phone, you want it to be always ready, always, you know, they just introduced that always on display. Maybe they'll bring that always on display to the cover display
I can see them doing both an iPhone and an iPad with this. Maybe something that folds into like the bigger, the Pro Max size, or honestly, even something that could fold into like the full iPad mini size. But I was reminded of there was a not so funny TikTok, but there was a TikTok. I was like, this is how different generations open their phones, and millennials just hold up their phone. Or no, it was like Gen Z.
Gen Z. Just millennials hold up their still phone. Were the ones that were like,
millennials have the little pocket cases, and you like open it up, your little wallet case, and you kind of look at everything. First of all, that's ageist, because it's clearly the next generation up. Like, it is, my wife's mom does that. All the older folks I know have these freaking wallet cases, and their wallets get stolen all the time. And I'm like, what are you, don't put your phone, don't put all of your cards and everything in a single case. Anyway, that's a whole other story. But I was reminded of like that thing. And there was sort of like, we all learn how to interact with these devices differently. I don't see Z Flip, like people who own that complaining about having to flip it up. Honestly, I think they like having to flip it up. Like, it is it's an action that kind of gets you back into it. Maybe for some people, they'll be like, it'll prevent me from doom scrolling because it takes more effort to get into my phone.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. It's a good put away phone. I also want to point out that video that spurred this entire conversation from, I guess, I don't know, KJMX. I'm playing it in the background as we speak. And a lot of it is them showing us screenshots from their text conversations.
Like really dramatic music in their texting.
And yeah, it's set like what a documentary. Yeah. So just so you know, all the texts are in Chinese, Mandarin, and I'm reading it, and it's just them talking about how expensive this will cost, how expensive it'll come. Can we find cheaper parts? Can we make this cheap? And just like, this is a concept device. Why are you like figuring out how to make it cheap? But it looks like they've challenged themselves to make
a device. It's a fun project. I kind of dig that. Yeah.
Right. That's going to be affordably priced, so that it might one day be feasible. And it's pretty, I don't know that I would call it a nightmare. I think it is a nightmare device, but I think that the whole effort and the whole project on the part of this team is kind of cool. It's a very nice look at if you're interested in the engineering of a foldable device at all, this is actually a very informational video.
For sure. It's more like a Frankenstein's monster type of thing, just like all these different parts kind of coming together to make this device.
I love that they just applied the Apple logo to the back of this freaking phone too.
It's amazing. Like, I do think like maybe something like the Z Flip that could just like pop up and sit on its like bottom and kind of be propped up a little could be useful at times, especially for video chats and things like that. So there are elements of it that I do kind of like. It's just like, I don't know if I want to be flipping my phones. Like, I don't want to flip it closed. It just seems like a waste of time. So anyway, I'm sure Apple is thinking about this and exploring it. Let us know, folks, like, what would you like to see in a foldable iPhone? Do you want the Z Flip idea? Do you want like a single thing that's basically smartphone size and can turn into like an old school flip phone? Or do you want something closer to the Galaxy Z Fold that's like a, you know, standard size but can expand to an even bigger screen? I kind of want something sort of in the middle, and I don't know how they would do that. Any other thoughts on this, Sherlyn?
I did, but let's move on.
Cool. So I wanted to deal with some fun news before we got into the worst things happening, like in the world, in the tech world, and honestly, in the news too. Like, this is just a crazy week. We just had the midterm elections in the U.S. A lot of things are changing. There's a lot of stuff in the news. Kanye West continues to go a little wild. This is, I don't know what reality we're in. Anyway, just recently, Meta announced that they're laying off 11,000 people, which is, you know, another set of layoffs that we're seeing in the tech world. Like, there was Twitter. There have been other companies that have been trying to like prune, you know, employees quite a bit. A lot of it, it does sound like Zuckerberg pointed to, hey, things were exploding at the beginning of the pandemic, and people assumed that maybe this would just keep going. Maybe people will be stuck at home. They'll have to use our products, and we should just invest in building more and more things. Turns out, not really the case. And also, Meta is just kind of flailing as a company because nobody believes in his idea of the metaverse. You know, like, ever since reorganizing around the metaverse and not so much Facebook and social networking, their stock has tanked. We talked about this quite a bit. Like, it's just been really rough. Any thoughts on this, Sherlyn? This is 13% of Meta's workforce just gone in an instant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, I knew we were going to talk about it today, but I was not expecting to see a post on Instagram from a friend of mine that works for Meta. That was like, just like, they were very heartbroken about what happened. They said that they had to say goodbye to 11,000 MetaMates, and that they've actually known about the news for a few days now, thanks to Wall Street Journal. So like, imagine being at Meta and you like hear the rumors that Meta is going to lay off 11,000 of you. And then my friend is in the like Asia Pacific, like offices, not in America. So, you know, you don't really know. They probably didn't really know they were going to be affected. And then finally, when they did get affected in the Asia Pacific offices, it was like, well, crap. So I don't know. I think that, like, for me, the human side of this is sad, right? Like, a lot of the stuff we're seeing now as, like, a result of the pandemic sort of waning. I don't even know if we can say that it's waning yet, but...
It's not really waning, but...
Right.
People as would a result like of, to make that case, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right, but as a result of things that were done during the pandemic as a method of coping or, you know, so in this case with, like you said, Meta hired
just
a lot and
building,
then now had to
just
let go
building,
of
like, hey, people are stuck at home. They need to use our stuff, so we should build
right.
more stuff. Yeah.
Right. And then we're seeing that those decisions weren't done with a lot of, or made with a lot of foresight, right? Like the whole like airline industry laying off a lot of people. And now like we're having delays everywhere because, well, we don't have the people we need.
Yeah,
again.
They took the money and laid off a lot of people. I love our system. I love our system quite a bit.
Don't even get me started on that. But yeah,
there are stories all around of people talking about their experience being laid off from Meta. In comparison, I do think people are saying, like, this process is at least better than what Musk did with Twitter and a lot of other companies did. Like, they give these folks fair warning. They're pretty lengthy. They're gonna have lengthy severance and, you know, time to figure themselves out. And it is kind of wild, though. Like, it's wild to think about 11,000 people is just 13%, right, of their workforce. Like, how much of the brain trust of the tech world is just caught up in these big companies? That's a lot of people. Those people are going to go out, maybe do startups or work for other folks. Like, that is just, that's all intelligence, like going out there and being back on the market. So who knows what will happen from all of that.
Well, here, Buddy305Love in the chat also has a very good point, which is, why did companies wait until the holiday season to lay people off? And the timing of this is indeed, you know, pretty inhumane. I don't know. I mean,
it's about quarterly cycles, right? So
exactly.
Yeah. Holidays
so
tend
like
to be
they
good.
Needed mm-hmm. they needed people to go in and be like, oh, make product so we can sell them. And then as you're approaching the holiday shopping season, that's when you don't really necessarily need the people who are in the manufacturing or the production or the, you know, product creation parts of the department. Now you just need people to buy stuff and hit your bottom line. So maybe that's why, but I don't know. It is a bummer that 11,000 people are now jobless and staring down the holiday shopping season.
It's rough. I do want to talk about the severance thing because, hey, more companies should be doing this. But it's going to be 16 weeks plus as their base severance, plus 2 weeks, two additional weeks for every year of service. No cap there. And they'll also cover health care for employees and their families for 6 months. And that's always because we're in such a crappy system in the U.S. where basically everybody gets health care. Most people get health care from their employers. That's a good thing. I'm hoping good things for these folks. It says
well,
that they will.
Mm-hmm. I guess that's cheaper than like keeping them hired because that's a one-off money thing you write
exactly,
off.
Exactly.
Dude named Charlie though brings up a good point. God forbid Zuckerberg take a pay cut from all of the billions.
I mean, he can't. And also like the thing about Facebook, and we've talked about this before, is that he is like the largest, you know, shareholder. He is fully in charge of that company. The board can yell at him, but they can't like take the company away from him. They can't really punish him in a way too. So a normal CEO would probably face some punishment after something like this, and he just can't. Another thing that's worth mentioning, Meta says that they're going to help people find new jobs by working with an external vendor, and they're going to support employees on Visa with a dedicated team of immigration specialists. And that's a big deal too. That's something that I think a lot of companies need to think about, because when you lay somebody off, if they're here on a visa, they got to go back home. They're screwed. I'm sure you care about that, Sherlyn. Like, that's kind of what you've been dealing with. Yeah.
That was always my worst nightmare, which is that like if I ever got laid off or lost my job, I would have to go home immediately. It depends also on the class of visa that you're on. Some classes of visas, and I'm not super familiar with which classes of visas do this, but some of them you don't really have like to go home immediately, but some you like do. So like it's a huge life change. And like for people who are making, that's why when I was on a visa, I could never really make long-term plans, because you never know when you're supposed to ditch everything and leave. So it's good to hear that they're working with visa workers on this, but I don't really know what that means for them. H-1B workers, maybe you have like a 10 to 2 week grace period to find another job, but it's also not just, especially for H-1B, which is the most popular tech visa, right? It's not just like that they want to help you stay in the country and find another job. It's also the transference of your visa to your new employer. And very often employers don't want to hire someone on a visa. mm-hmm. because it's a lot of additional money.
Yeah.
It's too much trouble. You never know if the visa is going to get approved. The good news with things like the H-1B visa is that you can transfer employer fairly easily, but not all visas are like that. Some of the O-1 and O-1 visa for artists and outstanding individuals, the L-1 visa, which is about managers within an organization managing overseas staff, those are a lot trickier to navigate in these types of situations. So again, while I'm glad that they're, you know, saying that they're going to help visa workers, which, like you said, is something that companies need to think about, I'm also just kind of not sure what the limits are there.
Yeah. This is rough time. It's going to be rough for everybody, too. So we're seeing a lot of layoffs.
If there's one thing I'm an expert about, clearly it's visas and working in the U.S.
So things are rough for tech. Honestly, things are rough for a lot of people in America, too. So I'm hoping these folks bounce back. And yeah, stay safe, everybody. Like, this is, we're going to be facing a weird financial time. And even if there's a lot of reporting going like, yeah, the economy's not as bad as people are saying, I think inflation actually went down to like 7.5%. It was the news I saw this morning. Things aren't as bad as they're saying, but a lot of companies are reacting as if we're going to be facing a real, you know, financial crisis. And that still means even if it doesn't happen, they're going to be, you know, thinking of firing people. So just be safe, people. And yeah, we're going to ride this one out. In other news, some crazy things are happening around FTX, the crypto giant, and also Binance. So FTX has been in a lot of trouble. Apparently, there was like, a big run on their value, and things were looking pretty bad for FTX. And then Binance, which is the largest crypto firm, I believe FTX is the third largest. But Binance was like, okay, cool, we will buy you out so that it doesn't tank this entire industry. And then shortly after that story hit, Binance was like, nah, bruh, I'm not into this, because they did do due diligence and saw that FTX is in a lot of trouble. So now this company, which a lot of people I think were talking about as one of the highlights of the crypto world, you know, the founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, is like one of those young dudes. He's like 30 something. It was like, oh man, he built this company that's worth billions, tens of billions of dollars. He himself was up to 16 billion, I believe, most recently. I think it was even higher before that. This is like the miracle moneymaker that people want in the tech world, right? And it turns out there is a liquidity crisis, which means that they don't have enough currency to back up their speculation. A lot of people were withdrawing money as the overall crypto market was kind of tanking recently. So I think that's kind of what happened. But imagine this, like in the span of a couple of days, Sam Bankman-Fried's net worth went from $16 billion to $990 million. He's no longer a billionaire with a B. This story is ongoing, and we're gonna, like, we cover some of it in Gadget. I think TechCrunch is doing more extensive coverage, because this is in the world where I don't follow crypto. I don't care about crypto, partially because I felt like so much of this stuff is snake oil, and it turns out, like, as all of this stuff is kind of falling apart, it is kind of snake oil. But unfortunately, it's snake oil that's also like helping to destroy our environment too. So that's fun. Sam Bankman-Fried this morning did his like mea culpa thread of tweets. First tweet, I'm sorry, that's the biggest thing. I fucked up and should have done better. Sorry, swear warning, I should have done that. Two, I also should be communicating more recently. And then he goes on in this thread to kind of explain what the situation was. And he basically said he misread the sense of like the amount of liquidity that they had and the amount of withdrawals people had. And they basically saw $5 billion worth of withdrawals on Sunday when he didn't expect that. And that just kind of tanked the overall value of the company. I don't know. Thoughts, Sherlyn?
I will first tell you my first thought, which is that in our show notes, it is listed as Binax, B-I-N-A-X. And I'm like, why is this at-home test maker in crypto? Uh-huh. And it's actually Binance, B-I-N-A-N-C-E. Yeah. And I'm like, whoa, I was very confused for a
moment.
That's
what I was thinking. I was thinking that.
Okay, great. Yeah, you were like self-testing in your haze. I was self-testing. Fantastic.
No, you're right. But it is Binance. It was just what was good to know before.
So, but no. Yes, Binance, like the Chinese company that just replaced the word finance with the letter B in front.
That's fantastic. Actually a great name for a company. So
yeah, because B, Binance as in Bitcoin, B for B, you know, anyway. The other thing, my other like knee-jerk reaction to this is like, buy crypto, good. And yeah, mm-hmm. And then the rest of the way I feel about this is like you, I really do not give a effing F about crypto. I mean, look, I think blockchain has its merits. I think that there's a lot of technology involved in crypto that has like potentially good applications. I am so sick of finance bros and like this is, this really is well such finance bro people. Catch it.
Yeah, like
yes, catnip, it's, I'm sick of yeah. exactly. I tell me something that affects the real world, the real people who are going through real suffering. Not like I just spent my trust fund money or my vacation to Cabo for the millionth time in a year money on this, and now I'm like, you know, I look, monetary loss is no fun, no matter who it affects, but. I'm sorry, I could really, I just, I don't, it's I'm rough. So
anyway, if you want to hear the story of why we don't curry much, really cover much crypto, we do a bit of it in Gadget. TechCrunch does more, other places do more, but personally, I am like, I want this entire industry to burn to the ground. I'm sorry. So anyway, yeah, Sam.
Especially NFTs. Screw especially NFTs.
Sam Bankman-Fried is saying he's trying to raise capital for FTX International, which is the portion of the company that he says is actually in trouble. He says FTX US users are fine. Get your money out of that. He's also shutting down Alameda Research, which was a trading firm that he was doing. So, hey, bad time for crypto, and also bad luck for everybody who was starring in crypto ads back, like, not too long ago. Larry David, you know, the Curb Your Enthusiasm guy, that Seinfeld co-creator himself. This is pretty rough.
Pretty embarrassing.
For yeah. Larry David, because he did an FTX ad during the Super Bowl, and it just looks really different right now. Matt Damon's crypto, he did a crypto.com commercial, if you'll remember. Fortune Favors the Brave, which I think even South Park did a great job of parodying. We have a note here. If you invested $1,000 in crypto.com when Matt Damon told you to in October 2021, it would be worth $342 right now. So do that math. Scale that math. It's not great. It sucks for anybody who's losing money from this, but really, folks, be careful with crypto things because it's rough out there, and this whole industry is on stilts right now. It's going to collapse in big, big ways. Let's move on to another story. And you know what? I'm not going to spend too much time on this because I'm done. I'm done talking about Elon Musk and what he's doing to Twitter. But there has been news because he can't help but make himself the center of news because he owns Twitter and was always one of the biggest trolls.
I mean, it is an ongoing news story.
It is an ongoing news story, but yeah. It's like the attention you want to devote to it. Like I was seeing like all people were talking about on Twitter for the past couple of days was like what stupid things Elon Musk was up to. Meanwhile, the midterms were going on. A lot of things were happening too. And it's like, okay, there is a real world out there and real world consequences for things. So what happened? There was the $8 plan for Twitter Blue to get your blue check. That kicked off over the weekend, was kind of a mess. It also launched, when it did launch, there were two kind of check marks because there was a check mark below your Twitter name that looked like it was literally just pasted on there with scotch tape, like, oh, official. This is an official account.
And it's gray, and it's very small.
Not just a blue check account. And then a couple hours after that went live, and this is particularly funny because we were following this on the Engadget news desk, Elon Musk was just like, no, we're just going to stop doing that. I think because he actually looked at it and was like, this looks like garbage. This looks hilarious.
Or he got roasted,
I mean, this is a platform for him to get roasted. Like if he has a roast kink, like certainly he is getting his money's worth right now. But yeah, so now that second badge is gone. There is this other thing, which I don't know if you've noticed, Erlyn, but if you hover over somebody's blue check and click on it or tap on it with your phone, you get the reason of why they have the blue check. So now it's like, if you got it from, if you're like a celebrity or a media person, you get the message saying this account is verified because it's notable, yada, yada, yada.
Me rushing over to my own blue check right now to see what it
for
says.
For somebody who paid for Twitter Blue, it literally spills the beans like this person paid for Twitter Blue. not really a real blue check.
Mine says, all right, I just found out what mine says. Mine says this account is verified because it's notable in government, news, entertainment, or another designated category.
It says that for everybody, Philin. Don't worry.
It just says I didn't pay.
So anyway, we also talked about last week we talked about the layoffs that were impending on Friday. That happened. By Monday morning, they were like, oh no, we need some of you to come back because this was a poorly thought out plan and nobody knows who they report to and we need things to get done. He's banning people from working remotely. That news just went out this morning. Yesterday there was a Twitter space where Elon Musk was just like probably, I don't know, he was probably on a toilet. But he was like, I don't know, maybe people could tie their banks to their Twitter accounts and we could like give them good rates for loans. So he was filling the idea of a native payment system. Just not great. Not great all around. He is a man flailing to like keep this thing afloat and not lose his personal fortune. So anyway, that's Twitter. Twitter continues to be a mess, but my main takeaway, especially after last week's episode, is I'm not going anywhere. We've done Mastodon. I've tested Mastodon. I have an account there too, but
so
yeah, it's not the same.
For me, I have been... So here's the thing. The timing of this is very interesting, right? Because with the midterm elections happening right now.
Well, happened. Me kind yeah, of, yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, happened. Mm-hmm. Sorry, it's still in my head as ongoing because mm-hmm. I think...
There are ongoing vote counts and there are going to be runoffs and Florida did not go the way I wanted. So yeah.
Anyway, and so for me, I've been like not on Twitter as much because I've been experimenting with, yes, Mastodon a little bit, but also, be real, I guess I've been just like experimenting with like some of these newer social apps. And I've just felt so left out of the loop of the midterm news, yeah. right? Because Twitter is the place yep. where it happens. Twitter is the place where you catch up and engage with this news. So yeah, it's a little unfortunate that like, and I agree with you. It's not going away. I'm not going anywhere. I don't know that I'll pay the $8 thing, but, yeah. you know.
I want to be here to clown Elon Musk until this is done. But I also hope against hope, I don't know, that some other kindly billionaire out there will rescue Twitter at some point. Because it's really all we can hope for. I don't know what else it could be. Like, we don't have governments going out there taking over companies and being like, okay, you're too important to be left to your own devices. We're going to nationalize you and take over everything. That's not happening with tech companies yet, but I don't know. Maybe it should for certain things that are important. I mean, I think even President Biden was saying like, oh yeah, we got to look at all of Elon Musk's like connections, right? And like everything he's working on, because for him to be in charge of Twitter and for him to have like business connections in China and Russia and things that could potentially put him in a bad place, we should be keeping an eye on that. So anyway, that's Twitter news for the week. I want to talk about something quick that happened. Did you see this news, Sherlyn, about Apple limiting AirDrop reception to 10 minutes in China? So it used to be, if you want to be really wild about things and want to live a really dangerous life, you can leave your AirDrop open and anybody right. can send you stuff. If you've been on a subway or like a crowded room where people start throwing out like teens.
The digital equivalent of raw dog.
So many things. Teens, I think it was specifically like teenagers on the subway in New York would love to like just send out like random shit. Like not even like obscene things, because there are the dick pic things happening, but just like random memes. It's like TikTok level humor breaking into the real world, and they would laugh to themselves and everybody would be like, what does this mean? Like, what does this random assortment of letters and pictures mean? But anyway, the Apple announced that they're going to be basically limiting that to 10 minutes in China. Reportedly, this is in response to protests and people sharing images of police brutality. And also notably, Apple says that this feature is coming to the rest of the world eventually. It is, to me, very weird. It's essentially like censoring a feature that used to be pretty open before. I mean, I would tell people never leave your AirDrop open.
Right, I never did. Yeah.
Never do that. But if you're in a place where you want to share stuff, like it was nice to have the option. I think at the best you want to like limit it to your friends, you know, or people, trusted people. But this immediately seems to me like Apple responding to a censorship request by China, just being like, hey, yeah, we're just going to, you know, limit this feature. And now it's like, okay, this is just going to go to the rest of the world, because it's actually easier to do this rather than deal with other countries who may not want people spreading information freely. Thoughts?
As a newly minted Apple ecosystem person, AirDrop is a thing that I just go to my like events or whatever with friends, right? And I'm like, turn on your AirDrop. I'll tell everyone, turn on your AirDrop and send you like 10,000 photos and videos. I'm that like annoying drunk person
just like
that's
that.
Sending
just like
videos.
That. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And exactly like that. And like, they're always going like, it's on. So like at this point,
but
like,
I haven't heard that. You're not my contacts, therefore you cannot AirDrop me. Yeah.
Right. I'm like, is it everyone? Everyone. It better be everyone. And then like, it's not, you know, like I'm that like the belligerent person yelling at people to turn on their AirDrop now. And so now it becomes like everyone's going to have to actively go in and turn it on and whatever. So like, I can see it impacting some people. I don't see it as like a huge issue, because I'm already telling people to turn on their AirDrop before I send them things. And I maybe I'm wrong, but I think that's the way most people would do it anyway.
But for uses like this, you're like big public things, like maybe you're at a place where you want to be freely open to stuff from people.
True. Like at a concert.
Or, I don't know. Like, yeah, it is weird. It's a very strange move. And I'm sure we're going to hear more about this story, but this is not the first time Apple has like kowtowed to demands from China.
Yeah, exactly.
Like there were the stories of like equipment coming out of Taiwan. Couldn't say made in Taiwan, right? They had to be like, made in Chinese Taipei. That's what they were saying. Or made in Taiwan, comma, China. And Apple did that. So
that's,
yeah.
Never mind. I have thoughts.
It sucks. But anyway, that is the thing that's happening. It will not affect us yet. But Apple, we want to think of as the like benevolent tech company. But all these companies are doing business in China and other places where they can exert some control. And that control can be messy and can seem like just pure censorship. Yeah.
In China, it's hard. I don't think that Apple thinks it has more control than the Chinese government.
Nope.
You know what I mean? Like,
and it's so dependent on factories in China.
Companies can't even go in. They want the user base that China provides. Facebook's not in China famously. So like
it took Apple a while to get in there. It took a while for them to open up China stores. So.
Exactly. That's why they want to play ball.
My whole thing is this sucks. And I hope we do not see more of this, but everybody needs China. Everybody needs to be good with China. So unfortunately, that's where it is. I'm going to move on to another story, and one that just personally excites me because I'm getting into electric cars more, and specifically like electric family cars. And Volvo, after freaking months of teasing, I don't know if this has even been on your radar, Sherlyn, but like every couple of weeks, Volvo would like just release a video on their YouTube channel being like, it's coming. Our next generation car, our safest car ever. It's coming. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it has been officially announced. Andrew Tarantola has a story. It is the EX90, the electric follow-up to the XC90, which is like one of the most popular, at least on Volvo's side. Like, it is a midsize family SUV. It can fit 7 people. And I will admit right now that I ended up buying one of these things because not the EX90, that's not out yet, but I did buy an XC90 recently used because for years it has been my dream car, but I want to be the smart guy. I want to be like, okay, I'm gonna get a minivan for my family, I'm gonna get one that's a plug-in hybrid and everything. And I've talked about this on the site, and if you go look at my story about the Chrysler Pacifica, it was a great minivan until Chrysler recalled it because of freaking exploding batteries. And I just kind of gave up on waiting for the fix. It took them over 7 months, and there is actually a fix coming out, but I basically sold my car before that and moved over to the XC90. This new EX90, it looks beautiful. Volvo says it's basically a computer on wheels too, is a good way to think about it. And this is how cars are going to be moving forward. So it has a ton of sensors all around. It has a LiDAR sensor, like very similar to like what is in a lot of gadgets right now. A lot of cars have the LiDAR like low into the ground and like below the little like logo of the car. This LiDAR sensor is up high. It's like on the forehead of the car. And Volvo said it can see like hundreds of meters ahead. So basically it's all about security stuff. Like if somebody runs onto the street in the middle of a highway, when you're running at highway speed, it can detect that and automatically stop you. There are a lot of safety sensors all around. Volvo's talking about a safety shield. They want to build cars that don't kill anybody. Like, they want to reduce car deaths to zero, which is something I can kind of get behind. So I'm totally down with this. If you guys are looking into electric cars, we are doing more and more of this coverage. So check out Roberto Baldwin did a video on the Rivian R1S, which is another big family SUV that's electric that I know a lot of people are really interested in. So check out our coverage of the Volvo EX90. Let us know what you think. Like, I'm just like a little obsessed like with good family cars right now. So I had when we first moved to Georgia, I had the RAV4 hybrid. I moved over to the Pacifica minivan. Freaking recall happened. So I'm on the XC90. Good family cars, good electric family cars are going to be coming. Kia also has something called the EV9, which looks just really wild coming next year too. So, hey, computers on wheels. I dig them. I feel like if you actually drove, Sherlyn, can you drive?
Not really yet.
Okay.
I can. I just can't officially.
Don't worry. Like, it's the same thing with my wife. Like, she has a license, but I would, not on the road. I do think for a lot of people, like, especially as we need to move in different ways, and maybe self-driving could be a thing eventually. There is all the news about self-driving like taking a while to actually happen. But there's going to be probably more of a need for people to consider like how they're going to move around. More electrics. More electrics are good for everybody. And I think the EX90 looks really cool. I don't know if have you looked at pictures of this thing, Trillin?
Yeah, I'm just looking at
it. It's beautiful.
It now, yeah.
It's beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful baby. I'm loving it. You had some other news that you
wanted
to talk
you know
about.
What else is beautiful? Instagram's new redesign for the web. It's basically the Instagram version that you use in a browser. If you've been using it on a browser like I have, because apparently everybody wants to message me on Instagram and not an actual messaging app, so great. So
Instagram is no replacement for Twitter. This is what I hate Instagram.
I know.
Yeah.
But Instagram messages is growing as a means of communication for me, so I have to have it open in a tab now. Or I can download, I guess, the Windows version app of it. But anyway, the good news is that now Instagram has moved sort of the menu to, it's no longer just like a stretched out version of the mobile app. You have a proper left rail with things like a home, search, explore, messages, notifications, create on the left side. And you can, you know, they introduced like desktop uploads fairly recently. I think it was just last year. From the desktop, which means you could have used like Photoshop, properly Photoshopped or properly edited desktop creations onto Instagram. Now with this new layout, that's a three-column layout, it not only means easier desktop use of Instagram, but it also could hint at large screen device friendly interface coming to, let's say, tablets.
When did Instagram launch? Was it 2012?
Ages ago. I don't even remember the actual... Is it 20? No, it was before 2012 for sure. But maybe 2010.
2012 is when I believe they were bought. But people have been asking for this forever. What the hell are you doing?
But until today, until now, there's still no dedicated iPad app. Mm-hmm. There's still no dedicated tablet app. So, but with this, you know, the redesign for the desktop, hopefully is a sign of good things to come. I also want to power through just another piece of kind of funny, bittersweet news. Google is issuing refunds for Stadia stuff. So basically, if you bought a game through the Stadia store, or you have you bought some kind of content or subscription through the Stadia store, you will be getting a refund, and this will be automatically processed and returned to your credit card or your payment method. The thing that the company is not doing is it's not refunding Stadia Pro subscription fees. So that's just sunk costs. I'm sorry, y'all. And then it's also not yet unlocking the Stadia controller as a like a general Bluetooth controller for other people. So we need to hear about that thing, so that you don't have like a defunct device just gathering dust.
Kids, what do we learn from this? Don't buy Google consumer gadgets. Don't. Stop.
I feel like a Pixel phone's a good buy.
Yeah, now it is. But I mean, more like when Google's like, "Hey, we're gonna try doing this thing. This thing looks kind of interesting. I like games. Let's try to just rebuild the entire video game market around our stupid idea for streaming games." God.
Yeah. Well, good news is Google also noted in its FAQ announced this week that you can transfer in some cases your save data from your games from Stadia to some other platforms, but it really is up to the developers and publishers of those specific games. Apparently Ubisoft, Bungie, Rockstar, Bethesda are working on ways to help players move their game progress to other platforms. Cyberpunk 2077, players can already export their save data to the PC version and then sync it to your console.
Very cool. I love the flexibility of save data now. Like it is saving a lot of time. And for anybody who spent like hundreds of hours in Assassin's Creed on Stadia, like it is nice to be able to get that out of there. But have you actually used Stadia, Sherlyn?
Or any of these things, yeah. Other than at a demo event or like, I have a Stadia setup controller and everything that Google sent, or like at an event I received it still in plastic wrapping in the box.
How many Google devices do you have? They're just like, "Oh, we're going to launch this thing." And then you haven't even opened it. And they had fully killed it.
That's the one most obvious one. That's the only one, actually, because everything else, even the things that are dead, like Clips, I had to open it to review them. So Clips is so dead. But there we go. Yes.
Anyway, let's talk about some things around Engadget, because we have a lot of fun things going on. We've got our holiday gift guide series going on. And you want to highlight, one trillion, the best gifts for tea lovers in 2022. I like the shape of a lot of these tea gadgets. These look really cool.
Sam Rutherford wrote up a part of our holiday gift guide. He wrote up a best gifts for tea lovers in 2022. There is, I think, a not a companion piece, but kind of a parallel piece for coffee lovers.
There is, yeah.
On the site. And I forget who wrote it, but I know that Sam Rutherford is a good person to write this story. Not because he is a massive tea lover, but his wife is so pedantic about their tea.
Wow, just airing her out there. It was Billy Steele. It was Billy Steele who did the coffee.
The coffee one? Mm-hmm. Okay. So the teapot that the kettle that Sam recommends in the guide is I think everyone who knows tea and boiling water will find it familiar looking. I've seen it in many a friend's apartment, and it's one of those that you can control the temperature, keep the temperature.
It's very pretty. It's very pretty.
It's very pretty. Yeah. It's got a long gooseneck sort of a spout. It's just easy to use. I personally don't think it's got enough capacity for the amount
of
hot liquid
small.
I drink.
Yeah.
It's kind of tiny, and it's very well insulated, so those walls are thick too. So it really doesn't contain a lot of liquid.
That's a shame.
But you know, at least you can put like water in there and just leave it there, and it'll be hot all day.
You know what? Good gift for everybody. Get an electric tea kettle. Like if you drink any bit of tea, if you
have one over, yeah.
I like the Cuisinart one that is just like a big thing and has different temperature settings. I don't need a dial for temperature, but give us some control.
Exactly.
Nice.
Same.
Yeah.
I use a cheapo. I'm a Singaporean as they come. Either you use a stovetop kettle or I use electric one, and an electric one just a cheap $20
cheap
Amazon.
One. Yeah.
Version.
I mean, we also recommend the Breville IQ electric kettle. So that is another option there.
Sam has also recommended, recommended some frothers in there that will really elevate your tea drinking experience. I have some myself that I've never used because they're such a mess and such a pain.
You're supposed to froth below the line so it's not like getting everywhere, but yeah.
But cleaning those, yeah. I'm a big cleaner. Anyway, go on.
There's a lot of cool gadgets here, and I would say look at these things for gifts. Like, this is why we're doing this. We've got a lot of great gifts ideas. I saw a couple other guides go up. There was the best earbuds, headphones. There's the best tech toys and gifts for kids, best board games. I love a lot of this stuff. And yeah, if you buy stuff through Engadget, you help to support the site too, which is kind of fun. So check out our guides. I am already starting to buy some gifts, and we'll probably have Valentina.
I already bought too many. Yeah.
You bought too many. I'm waiting for mine, Trillin. Waiting. We will also get Valentina on, our guides editor and our like lead of commerce, to talk about all these things too, because it's that time of the year, and I think there's some really cool things to do. And the best thing to do is like being able to buy smarter instead of just like buying crap for people. I think people appreciate good gifts, you know?
That's why I recommended some gifts last episode. And y'all were like, that's not a pop culture. But anyway, let's moving on. Speaking of, what have you been working on, Devendra?
Sure. I've been talking with Magic Leap. Remember them? The AR headset company. The Magic Leap 2 headset officially launched at the end of September. And I've been talking with them about the tech behind it. I talked a bit about this last week, I think. But it is that feature is going to be going up this week soon. So I'm going to be prepping that. But there is some cool hardware in here. I think it is the best looking AR headset I've ever seen, but it's from Magic Leap, and a lot of people have lost faith in them. They have a new enterprise focus, which could be a big deal, but it also seems like even the enterprise is not doing well enough for Microsoft, because that's where HoloLens was being targeted and HoloLens 2. So, hey, this is all up in the air, but it's really fascinating to see the Quest or the Magic Leap 2 and the Meta Quest Pro coming out at the same time. Like some really high-end looks at AR and VR. What are you working on, Trillin? Mm-hmm.
I've been testing out Microsoft's adaptive mouse kit, which we've covered a few times now. It was very nice and easy to set up. I think in actual use, these things don't work like I imagined they would. But one of the things that's crucial to our coverage of this device, now that we have it ourselves, is we want to get it out there in the hands of or in the experiences of people who would benefit, right? So people with limited mobility, so it's going to take us a little bit more time to maybe produce or publish something. But if you can think of ways that the Microsoft Adaptive Mouse or the Hub or the Switch kit would improve your life, let me know on Twitter. I'm at Sherlyn Lowe. I really would like to see creative or just, you know, actually beneficial ideas for someone that's, you know, unlike myself, I'm able-bodied. So this is, I see some benefit, but I might be blind to a few of them. So let me know. And then some other stuff that we're testing is under embargo. So I can't really talk about it yet.
Okay. Well, keep an eye out. Like, we're also like fully ready to start preparing for CES because it's freaking November and Hey guys, just all sit tight. We've got a lot of news incoming, and we're going to be probably even more tired. And you know what? Yeah, prepping for stuff. I like that mouse. It's a good looking mouse. Sherlyn, what do you have for a pop culture pick this week?
So nobody told me. I'm personally blaming everyone that didn't tell me. But Manifest season 4 is live on Netflix. Y'all remember Manifest?
No, nobody remembers Manifest.
Everybody know Manifest. Manifest was like, yeah. it took the world by storm.
Yeah.
Oh, it took the world by storm when it launched on Netflix or came over to Netflix from Fox or something. So season 4 is up. And I got to tell you, with Netflix being the people who are in, like, you know, paying for season 4, things get real melodramatic. It's a whole vibe shift. The acting got somehow worse. The storyline is way more dramatic. I have not finished the season, so there's things like that. But I've been looking and waiting for the team behind this show to expand the story, to kind of explain to me what's going on. And I'm not sure just yet if they know where they're going.
This is a show about people disappearing from a plane, right, and reappearing?
Yes. So exactly.
I cannot get over the fact that this show basically stole the concept of the 4400 in a way,
yes,
too.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
There's so many adaptations of the same plot, right? So this is basically, yes. So a plane disappears 5.5 years later, it reappears. Everyone on board is the same
age as
the
first episode of Fringe, even? Right? Like, it was Zip a plane
enough.
Thing.
Well, Fringe was a plane-related pilot. Yeah. I know Fringe so well, but the first episode was not about people. It was all people on board who were. The Strain also starts with a plane landing with people mysteriously dead in it. This one's just, it's a mishmash of things. It's Lost. It's like, Fringe, 4400, the 100, so many. I will say season 4 is out, and I've been enjoying it even despite the melodrama and whatever. I've just been, you know, getting back into that world. I like being back in that
mystery-solving
atmosphere.
Deal with that. Manifest, I don't know, people. I don't know. The big question
mark. Don't be a hater. Why you gotta shit all over what I watch? Jesus.
I will talk about one of the best things on TV right now, which I've recommended before, but I also think you should watch, Sherlyn, which is Andor on Disney+.
So you're recycling ideas.
I'm recycling this because I think when it started, we were like, oh, this is pretty good. I think this is pretty good. Now we were like 10 episodes in, and I'm like, holy crap. This is one of the best Star Wars things ever made. It is one of the best things on TV right now. It is a great exploration of ideas in the Star Wars universe that's never really been done before. It is sort of looking at like how rebellion is formed, because Star Wars was always the rebels versus the evil empire, but this kind of gets into the nitty-gritty of that and what that means, and the way empires can basically use fascism to kind of control their population and get people really excited about really simple things. In a weird way, this show feels like it's almost preparing people for the world we're kind of stepping into. So I don't know, but I do think it's incredibly well written, incredibly well acted. Andor is very good. And also, I was happy to see that there's another Star Wars animated series out right now called Tales of the Jedi. And I think you'd really like this one, Sherlyn, because Tales of the Jedi is bringing in characters we've seen before, like Ahsoka and Count Dooku from the prequels, which nobody remembers. But it brings those characters back. It shows us like aspects of their lives we haven't seen before. We see something like from when Ahsoka was born, I think is pretty cool. And Count Dooku, like as a Jedi man, who's starting to like lose faith basically in everything. I think the animation is good. The series is created by Dave Filoni, who's basically been behind a lot of the like Star Wars animated stuff, and also like in The Mandalorian too. Like he's done a lot of writing on that. So I have had a hard time getting into the Star Wars animated shows because I think the animation looks kind of bad. A lot of them have been geared towards kids too. So like Clone Wars and even like the Rebels show, I think that's what it was called. Just never really got into them. These are like bite-sized episodes, 15 to 20 minutes. Cool characters. I like good animation and good storytelling. So I think these are like a good way to get into extra stories around these characters in the Star Wars universe. So check out Tales of the Jedi. That's on Disney Plus right now.
Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. This podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find The Vindra at
at Devendra on Twitter, and a podcast about movies and TV at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me great ideas for how to better use the Microsoft Adaptive Mouse, or you want to send me better TV show ideas, you can hit me up on Twitter. I'm at Sherlyn Lowe. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.